Chapter 8. The week after the superintendent paid his visit to the school, we got our first load of wood for winter. Two old men brought the wagon load about 11 o'clock that morning. We did not have a gate wide enough for the wagon to come through, so the men came into the yard next door to the church. One got down off the wagon to open the gate, and the other drove the wagon into the yard. I could not see them, but I could hear them. They were joking about the mules, the wood, and the weather. One of them said, "Don't let Bud hang us up in that ditch now. I don't feel like unloading all this wood way out here and got to put it on that wagon again." "She gonna pull," the other one said. "Hi there, Bird. Get them shoulders in there." I heard the wagon cross the ditch and enter the yard. "All right," I said to the class. "The first one who looks outside will spend an hour in the corner. They can do pretty well without you." The wagon came farther into the yard on the other side of the fence, passing the church windows. I could see the two mules, one big and red, the other small and dark brown with long, droopy ears, pulling hard into the chains. Then I saw the long poles of wood stacked high upon the wagon, with one of the old men riding atop the wood while the other, the one who had opened the gate, walked alongside the wagon. They were still joking and laughing. "Louis Washington, Jr., get back into that corner and face the wall."
"But, Mr. Wiggins, now you was looking out that window too now. I seen you."
"Just out of the corner of my eye," I said.
"Now I was just looking out the corner of my eye too, Mr. Wiggins."
"In that case, I won't punish you for looking out the window," I said. "But I'm going to punish you for using bad grammar. You were supposed to say you were looking out the window, Mr. Wiggins, not you was looking out the window, Mr. Wiggins. Get back in that corner and face the wall and stay there. One more word out of you and you'll spend the rest of the day standing on one leg." Sitting at my desk, I could hear the old men unloading the wood, throwing the long poles across the fence and into the churchyard. They were still kidding each other.
"Show me them grits. Show me them grits you had this morning."
"I got my end up."
"Well, I got the heavy end. You sure got that right."
They both laughed, and I heard the wood come across the fence. This went on for half an hour. Then one of the men knocked on the back door. I went to see what he wanted.
"Professor," he said, and smiled.
Henry Louis was a short black man with hardly any teeth. His hands were the color and texture of the legs of a snapping turtle. He wore an old straw hat, a green and brown plaid shirt, khaki pants, and rubber boots. He had grandchildren in the school.
"Some wood there," he said. "I'm leaving the saw and couple them axes. Your boys can chop it up."
"Appreciate it, Mr. Louis," I said.
"Glad to be of service."
I spoke to Amos Thomas, who sat on the wagon. The thin, brown-skinned man nodded at me.
"That ought to hold you a while," Mr. Louis said to me. "Just call for a run out. Somebody get you another load."
"Thanks," I said.
"Bye, Professor."
"Goodbye, Mr. Louis, Mr. Thomas." I returned to my desk. "All right," I said to the class. "It's 11:45 now. I'm letting you out early because you'll have to chop wood this afternoon. I want you all back up here by 12:30. That afternoon, I stood by the fence while the 5th and 6th grade boys sawed and chopped the wood. The smaller boys and all the girls were inside. They wanted to know why they had to study while the older boys were outside having fun. I told them that they could have fun the next day, picking up chips and stacking wood while the older boys were inside studying. They did not see this as quite the same, but when I didn't give them any other choice, they grudgingly relented. I gave them assignments and left Irene Cole in charge. Standing by the fence, I watched the 5 older boys saw and chop the wood. 2 would saw, while another would straddle the wood pole to keep it steady. The other 2 boys split logs and chopped up small branches with the axes. They laughed and kidded each other while they worked. And I thought to myself, what am I doing? Am I reaching them at all? They are acting exactly as the old men did earlier. They are 50 years younger, maybe more,
but doing the same thing those old men did who never attended school a day in their lives. Is it just a vicious circle? Am I doing anything? After a while, they exchanged the saw and axes. The ones who had been sawing were now splitting logs. The other two were pulling on the handles of the saw. The smallest boy still held the log as steady as he could with his hands and knees. With my back to the fence as I watched them, I remembered when it was I who had swung that axe and pulled my end of the saw. And I remembered the others, too. Bill, Jerry, Claudie, Smitty, Snowball, all the others. They had chopped wood here, too. Then they were gone. Gone to the fields, to the small towns, to the cities, where they died. There was always news coming back to the quarter about someone who had been killed or sent to prison for killing someone else. Snowball, stabbed to death at a nightclub in Port Allen. Claudie, killed by a woman in New Orleans. Smitty, sent to the state penitentiary at Angola for manslaughter. And there were others who did not go anywhere but simply died slower. The big mulatto from Pelea had predicted it, hadn't he? It was he, Matthew Antoine, as teacher then, who stood by the fence while we chopped the wood. He had told us then that most of us would die violently, and those who did not would be brought down to the level of beasts. Told us that there was no other choice but to run and run, that he was living testimony of someone who should have run. That in him, he did not say all this, but we felt it. There was nothing but hatred for himself as well as contempt for us. He hated himself for the mixture of his blood and the cowardice of his being, and he hated us for daily reminding him of it. No, he did not tell us this, but daily he showed us this, as clearly as anything. He showed his hatred for himself and for us. He could teach any of us only one thing, and that one thing was flight, because there was no freedom here. He said it, and he didn't say it, but we felt it. When we told our people how we felt, they told us to go back and learn all we could. There were those who did go back to learn, others who only went back. And having no place to run, they went into the fields, others went into the small towns and cities, seeking work, and did even worse. But she told me that I would not be one of the others, that I would learn as much as he could teach me, then I would go away to learn from someone else. But that I would learn as much as he could teach me. And when he saw that I wanted to learn, he hated me even more than he did the others, because I challenged him when the others did not. The others believed what he said. They went out into the fields, went into the small towns and into the cities, and died. "So you think you can?" he said. "So you think you can?" No, he did not say it with words, only with his eyes. "You'll be the loser, my friend." Maybe he did not say friend. He probably didn't say friend. Fool, more likely. "Anyway, you will be the loser," he said. "Yes, I will teach you. You want to learn? I will help you learn. Maybe in that way I will be free, knowing that someone else has taken the burden. Good, good. You want to learn? Good, good. Here is the burden.